Good afternoon. It is March 7th, 2019, and this is Dan in Little Saigon, Seattle, with another whatever, another installment of the Little Saigon Report, right? Well, I have a little bit of good news before I get into the topic. I have a job interview tomorrow, and I'm very hopeful I'll do well. If it goes well, it could give me maybe up to a year's worth of work. And a year's worth of work these days is kind of amazing. I know. I don't really want to have wealth or prosperity. I read that article on Zero Hedge today. And just so you know, my other account did get banned, but I do have a new account until it gets banned. Not that it matters. I only go to Zero Hedge because, more or less, it's kind of the last redoubt. It's the last little barrier, and it's not that good. I mean, Zero Hedge is more or less polluted at this point compared to where it was 10 years ago. So, as much as I would say Zero Hedge is terrible, I find myself modifying that quote from Winston Churchill about democracy. Being the worst form of government, excepting all others, which in many ways is a statement of affirmation for true anarchism, but that's another topic. But yeah, Zero Hedge is probably the worst news aggregation site, with the exception of every single other site out there. And yeah, there's probably one or two blogs or podcasts that are telling a kind of truth, but when it comes to news aggregation, that's its own animal. I don't know. It's possible that in a few weeks we all get messages from some Zero Hedgey about some other site out there, not 4chan, not Zero Hedge, not CNN or Fox News, but something better just out there further west, right? I was reading an article on Zero Hedge today about Kyle Bass and his continued bet against the yuan in China, their currency. His basic premise is that their economy is unsustainable, that they have leveraged themselves up too much, and that at some point the yuan is going to crash. They will have no choice but to devalue their currency. And I gotta say that Kyle Bass has a reputation as someone who is quite savvy when it comes to the marketplace. But that being savvy by itself isn't necessarily enough. A lot of this is about paradigms. If you enter the marketplace at this point, you say to yourself, this is free enterprise, this is a free market, ergo, ergo, in a free market where there's very little either governmental or, God forbid, intergovernmental collusion, these types of rational predictions would make sense. The problem is that I am not convinced that the sham, the scam that is the US economy and the European economy and the Asian economy and the Russian economy, that these are all separate scams. At this point, especially given, the QE that went around the world between 2013 and 2017, yeah, I would say this is a worldwide sham. And it may be the case that the people running the sham, the central banks, are running out of ammo. That could be the case. But how do you know if you're not on the inside? How do you know if you don't know what they know? I mean, a lot of this is a numbers problem, and it's a question of margins. And when it comes to margins, we're talking about fractions. And ultimately, if you have the right numbers, which means the true data, you can figure out where the breaking points are. You can figure out the things that you need to hide. And part of this is just figuring out how to keep people from talking, shutting people up. So whether it's the omni control of human communication, which is completely at odds with free speech, but nobody seems to give a fuck, or whether it's the fact that they seem hell-bent on toxifying people, to the point that all we have now are mostly wounded on the battlefield and people wounded in the head. You know, lots of cancer, lots of autism, lots of dementia. And all of this is just normal. You know, they would say to you, well, Dan, you know, it's because we weren't monitoring it 30 or 40 years ago. We didn't know about it. It is in many ways a lot like the Schrodinger's cat thought experiment. The argument that's made about issues of vaccines and aluminum in the natural environment is, well, Dan, it wasn't until we looked that we found it. Yeah, okay. That's some pretty slick physics if you're actually a quantum physicist. But if you're dealing with the realm that we all live within, that particular position is kind of fucking ridiculous. But it's doublethink. So yeah, Kyle Bass has a reputation. I don't know the guy. I am not deeply familiar with any white papers or articles he's written. He is one of these investor figures that showed up over the years. And certainly, if you believe the stories, he was one of those folks back in 2006 who saw the housing bubble for what it was. But again, I really don't know. I do think he's basically right with respect to China, but the problem is what does it mean to be right in this particular circumstance? If China is pushed economically to the edge, what will its government do? Will it simply print money and watch its society deteriorate and watch, you know, the crazy people come for their families? You have to understand, many of these people running China today were either children or younger adults during the Cultural Revolution, okay? They were either kids or in their 20s during a period of time when the Chinese government lost control. So the idea that they would experience this loss of control and not attempt a strategy to maintain control seems ridiculous to me. And all the evidence coming out of China, especially the social credit system, leads me to believe that they're not losing control in the philosophical sense. They might be losing control on the ground, but in terms of their will to maintain power, they have not lost their will to have control. Whether they can maintain control on the ground is a whole nother topic, but at the top level, they haven't lost their faith, or rather, they realize, which probably the ruling classes around the world realize at this point, that the one thing they cannot do, and this is something Napoleon said a long time ago, is sit on your bayonets. They can't sit on their bayonets. It's like what Napoleon said. The one thing you can't do with bayonets is sit on them. And the riddle of this quote is really quite simple. If you rule by force, you can't stop ruling by force. Once you do, the gig is up. It's over. It's done. It's civil war. It's revolution. So Kyle Bass is wagering on a scenario that would lead the Chinese government to lose control. And I don't think that that's a fairly wise bet. And he might be approaching this from the perspective that we really are living in an age of global free trade and free enterprise, despite all the tariffs and trade war bullshit that in some sense capitalism won at the international level. And I think this is kind of this is a false belief. I think that Kyle Bass's paradigm is broken. You know, he might be a brilliant guy, but the problem is, if you look at the world through the wrong paradigm, I think you can lose a lot of money. It's sort of like the folks since 2009 who've constantly called for crashes. You know, Peter Schiff, every 2 or 3 years since 2009, has called for major economic collapse. And it doesn't mean he's wrong on the fundamentals. It's just that he's looking at this through the paradigm of a free market. It's not a free market. It really isn't. It's a system of rackets. It's crooked as fuck. And when you're dealing with crooked as fuck systems, you have to think of it from the perspective of forensic accounting and organized crime. We are talking about organized criminals colluding and working together to keep a sham of a world economy functioning. And in that circumstance, what would China do? Does China uncontrollably devalue their currency, or do they do an economic, political, or political, economical bait and switch? Here's a question for the audience. Is there a way to print money to debase your currency without massive consumer inflation? Well, sort of. We've been through an experiment in this with QE. You know, a big part of quantitative easing was about directing excess, you know, printed money, so to speak, to both A, situations that were already in the hole, and that is the giant financial, you know, financial craters that were left behind by the great financial crisis. A lot of QE, TARP money, all that went into sort of filling in those holes. And then the rest went to essentially the investment class. It went to corporations to buy back stock. So that's where that money went. And because it went there, you could make the argument that it didn't really have a direct effect upon consumer inflation as much as it might have. But you cannot make the argument, and this is where things get really stupid. There's no rational person I've met who would say there has been no consumer inflation. A big part of the bait and switch is convincing people that inflation doesn't exist. They convince you, well, you can't include shelter as inflation because you don't need shelter, which is a load of horse shit. It's total fucking bullshit. You know, it is essentially one of the things you pretty much need, with very few exceptions throughout history, is shelter. Food, water, shelter. Don't be a dumbass. But yeah, they did a good job of convincing people over the last few decades that your house is an investment and therefore it's wealth. It's not shelter. It's not a need. It's a want. It's a luxury. The other thing they've done with respect to inflation, and this is a big part of what Alan Greenspan achieved while he was Fed chief, is they've rejiggered the numbers. They've recalculated the numbers so that what we perceive as inflation is no longer inflation. Yeah, it's true. When you go to the grocery store every year now, it's more expensive to feed your family, but that's not how you're supposed to think about it. You're supposed to understand that there's some sort of hedonic behavior and that when you switch from steak to hamburger, somehow it's the same fucking thing, despite all the pink slime that's being added to it. So I think Kyle Bass is probably a brilliant man. And the problem that he may be facing is he's looking at the world the wrong way. He actually has more faith in the economy than someone like myself. I have zero faith. You know, I do not believe we live in a free society. I do not believe we have a free market. 10 or 11 or 12 years ago, I would have probably said something different. I would have said, you know what? It's great to be in America because for all the bullshit, at least we have freedom and a free market. And that would have made me an idiot. But I understand there are a lot of people who are deeply invested in the belief that things are not as crooked as they are. And there's a reason for this. And it's not just cognitive dissonance. And I think it is related to paradigms and paradigm shifts, but it's not just that. If you admit to yourself that the economy has been a sham for at least 10 years and probably longer, if you admit that our economy, the United States economy specifically, but really the whole world economy, is a crooked criminal enterprise, and then you admit to yourself that the reason why they're cracking down on people thinking for themselves, the reason why they're cracking down on free speech, is out of fear, and that's everywhere. That's not just in China. Don't be a fucking moron. People are afraid of ideas, a whole bunch of ideas, everywhere in the world right now. United States of America cracks down on free speech. China cracks down on free speech. Europe definitely cracks down on free speech. Yeah, the UK cracks down on free speech. So it's not just special to China. They might be doing extraordinary measures to control their population, but it is not special to them that their lives have become a tyrannical hell. In fact, if anything, the rest of the world is catching up to them. If you see it this way, the way I do, and I'm not saying I'm right, and honestly, it's not special to me. A lot of people are beginning to see things this way. If you see it the way we do, then you have to admit to yourself, there are a lot of potentially angry motherfuckers out there, and you're outnumbered. And it's not 2-1. It's not 3-1. if you're wealthy right now, it's not 5 to 1. It's more like 20 to 1, or maybe even a fucking 100 to 1. For every one person who thinks they're safe with all their gold and silver and Bitcoin and investments, and how they know that they'll ride out this economic singularity in style with all their prepper goods and their Berkey water filters. For every one person that is debt-free and doing fine, there's 80 to 100 people out there who are on the edge of collapse. And when they wake up, what do you think happens? You think you're going to pay cops? The cops won't get paid. You know, this is the funny thing about the robot stuff. And this is why when Google bought Boston Robotics, it did not surprise me. If you are one of those 1 in 100 or 1 in 200 people, and that's actually a really optimistic fraction, I think it's closer to 1 in 1,000. But let's say you're the 1 in 100. Let's say you're the 1 in 500 worldwide that is still a part of that group of people who would consider themselves mostly debt-free, mostly doing fine, not living paycheck to paycheck like that other dumbass Zero Hedge article today. Well, dude, you're surrounded by 80 to 100 to 500 people who are not doing so fucking great. What are you going to do? What's your plan? Is your plan to set up your machine gun nest? So no, I think the reason why Google bought Boston Robotics isn't really that complicated. People in charge right now understand that this entire game is coming to an end. And at some point, people will go crazy. And whether you agree with how they go crazy, that's a separate fucking topic. That's like having an opinion about the shape of a tsunami. I think you have to be an idiot to contemplate the tsunami as it approaches and ask yourself, is this a Nazi tsunami or a Marxist tsunami, or is it filled with Trumpsters? Who gives a fuck? It could be a cisgendered identity politics tsunami. But the point is, a giant wave is heading your direction. And if your plan is to simply stay where you're at, you're going to get killed. You see, I can understand people who are so wealthy that they would go and build a bunker someplace on, you know, really at the edge of nowhere and not tell anyone where they are. If you're going to go do that, that's how you do it. You find a place that's very isolated. You build yourself a bunker, you get yourself enough food and resources for a decade, and then make sure it's not even remotely close or accessible to any major city. And if you can do all those things, then yeah, I think you have a good chance of making it. But if you're living in some neighborhood in Seattle or Los Angeles or New York or Chicago or Miami or Houston, Texas, I don't care. If you're living in a nice neighborhood someplace, and you've got a bunch of bottled water in your basement, and you've got a gun safe that's full, yeah, dude, I have no doubt, given your extensive military experience, you know, this is me being sarcastic, given the fact that you probably spent all those fucking years learning, you know, all the Ranger school shit you need to know. Yeah, some of you went to Ranger school, and God bless you, because you probably have the common sense to know that you'd be in deep shit in a city. But for those of you, most of you, who made lots of money in the last few decades and didn't go to Ranger school, what the fuck are you, what is your plan? You think your neighbors are going to be a bulwark for you? Your neighbors are going to turn on you. I'll let you on a little secret that you may not be aware of, but you should be. If you live in a nice neighborhood, chances are half the people in your neighborhood are in trouble. It doesn't mean they'll be there forever. I mean, this is a timing problem, really. It's a question of when the alarm goes off. But I'd be willing to wager that if you live in an upper-class neighborhood, I don't mean super rich, I mean middle class to upper middle class, the few of those people that still exist. If you were to go any direction and you had the ability to see the truth of people's pocketbooks, you'd find out that most of the people on that street are barely getting by, and that most of their wealth is dependent upon paper. Whether it's the paper in a 401k or the quote-unquote paper value in their home, or if it's a bunch of fucking Bitcoin, that yes, you are going to need electricity okay, in a functional network for your crypto to function. I hate to break it to you, but yeah, there's a minimal technology requirement for crypto. So Kyle Bass is a genius, but the problem is, does that matter? You know, he's a genius, and yet he believes that somehow his wager will pay off. It's kind of like credit default swaps. You know, the whole concept behind a credit default swap is this idea that not everybody can fail, that enough people succeed that the system still functions. So if I bet, for example, that some particular debt that you've taken on is going to fail, that you will default, then in essence, I can get paid off, and that is a great investment for me, and potentially you can use that as a hedge also. But what if it's the scenario where maybe not everyone, but enough people fail? This is what happened in 2008 and 2009. It doesn't take every debt to go bad to trigger a cascade of credit default swaps. All it takes is a certain percentage. You know, and what is that magic number? For Kyle Bass, the magic number of Chinese reserves is somewhere around 2 trillion. If the Chinese get to 2 trillion in foreign reserves, foreign currency reserves, things will start going bad. It's not zero. It's not that they spend every last greenback or euro or rupee that they have, and probably mostly dollars, right? It's not the case that every greenback is used up. According to Kyle Bass, they just have to get to around 1.5 to 2 trillion. Well, this is a similar concept to a lot of these issues right now. The system is tight. The system is fragile. The system is not flexible. It's kind of like this question of, well, and again, this is going to seem random, but if you understand what I'm talking about, you realize it's not random. We're talking about rackets and organized crime, okay? When people say, for example, well, Facebook is so fucked, why doesn't it just go out of business? Or Tesla, look at Tesla, it's such a fucked company. The cars look like shit. Why are they still in business? It's not just that they're enabled to be in business, okay? Amazon doesn't really make a profit. So why do they keep growing, and why are they so fully supported? Listen, these companies don't exist because they simply get help. These companies exist because they must exist. For, you know, if this were free enterprise, the opposite would be true. Terrible ideas do not work in free enterprise. Too big to fail is not even a concept in free enterprise. No such concept exists in any conversation of any Austrian economics. Well, this company is so big and so incompetent and so unable to function correctly, it therefore can never fail. It's like the argument that Professor Black was making about Deutsche Bank. Out of one side of his mouth, and if you should look up some of his podcasts or YouTube interviews, Professor Black, out of one side of his mouth, will talk about the corruption at Deutsche Bank. And then on the other side of his mouth, he'll say, but the German government, blah, 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 can't allow Deutsche Bank to fail. Listen, if you believe in free enterprise, then you must realize that too big to fail is a colossal fucking lie. But that is the entire system. It's not just the banks at this point. It's not just Tesla. It's not just Facebook or Amazon. Okay? When it comes to these major institutions, they none of them can be allowed to fail. That is how fragile the system is. Let's imagine a scenario where the Chinese government gets very close to losing control of the value of yuan, of their currency. Well, their options are limited. But as I said, here's the riddle of, can you print money without inflation at the consumer level? And is there a way of doing that that doesn't involve quantitative easing? Well, it's simple. It's not really a riddle. It's not complicated if you studied any fucking history. The United States did it during the Second World War. You print as much fucking money as you want to, and you issue ration cards. Now, does that mean there'll be no black market? No, there'll be a black market. People will go outside the system. They'll trade their ration cards if they can get away with it. And technology's improved a lot, right? That smart device is so fucking helpful, correct? I hate to break it to you, but the rationing is easier today. It is way easier to implement rationing in 2019 than it was in 1941. So what you do is you print as much fucking money as you want to, and then you ration food, you ration water, you ration housing, you ration everything. That's what's going to happen in China. But in order to do that, you have to have a reason. And it will happen in China, and it will happen in Europe, and it'll happen in the United States. But what will be the reason? Well, the last time the reason, the major reason for rationing, and I'm not talking about Nixon's price controls because those were stupid as fuck and did not last long. I am talking about World War II. If you want to print a lot of money without the devaluing process impacting your civil society in a way that would destabilize, then you have to come up with a few things. One, you have to control consumption. Two, you have to control the population. You have to do something like give them an enemy. And the problem with the War on Terror is, as crappy as it is and as shitty as it is, the enemies were always second rate. Osama bin Laden was never going to be Hitler, okay? The Al-Qaeda was never going to be the Nazis or the Soviet Union. It just was never going to be. And it may have been their hope in their little, you know, thematic meeting room somewhere in LA in 1998, you know, talking to Hollywood artists and other CIA fucks, it may have been their hope that they could pull off a World War II scenario by toppling a couple buildings. But yeah, that was a far-flung hope. That was never going to fucking work. It may have bought them a decade or two of bullshit, but really, it was never going to do what I'm talking about. So Kyle Bass can bet against the yuan, but what if it becomes illegal to bet against it? What if the government, all governments, come along and say, you know, these derivatives products, these credit default swaps, all of these tools you're using to hedge and to bet against each other, well, we've all decided that they have to be frozen. And whatever the current value is, what it is, and if you're paying fees in a carry trade, stop paying fees. And oh, by the way, here's your fucking ration allotment for coffee and meat and flour next week. And oh yeah, the Choco ration's going to go up. You know, that's a little tip of the hat to George Orwell. See, I think people like Kyle Bass are brilliant. And I think that folks like Peter Schiff are smart. And I think they know what's going on in a free world. They are folks who are prepared and willing to, you know, be exceptional and successful in a free market, but they're not really designed to be exceptional or even correct as the market becomes more and more of a racket. And I think the reason why people write articles like, well, if you're working paycheck to paycheck, it's because you want to. Listen, folks, I've met a lot of hardworking people who work paycheck to paycheck. It is not because they want to. And they try to get ahead. And the more they try to get ahead, the more they slide backwards. And in some ways, these articles, these stupid articles about everybody who's poor wants to be poor, are a lot like the stupid fucking identity politics arguments about everybody getting a fucking A. I'm going to let you on a little secret, folks. And I'm sorry if I break your fucking hearts or I hurt your fucking feelings. Not everybody should get an A, okay? The A, getting an A in your class, would mean nothing if everyone gets an A. Not everyone's going to be rich, even in a free market. This is a really sad truth for people who are idiots, but even in a free market, not everyone's going to be rich. In fact, in all likelihood, no matter how free our society was, you would probably have fewer people, you know, quote-unquote, at the top than at the bottom. But the thing about a free market, if it's actually free, is the people at the bottom generally do better. Their lives aren't as crappy. In a free market, we're not constantly telling people inflation is good. So a person who has 10 bucks in their pocket can buy more next year with $10 rather than less in a free market. Deflation, believe it or not, is a good fucking thing. Free markets allow it. In fact, free markets embrace deflation. But in the upside-down crony system we have now, inflation is good, deflation is bad, war is good, peace is bad. Companies that are super gigantic cannot be allowed to implode. small businesses should go fuck themselves. And then we get articles about how everybody could be an entrepreneur if they drove 100 miles to work. Are you fucking kidding me? So yeah, I gotta say, the problem with the arguments of folks like Kyle Bass isn't that they're wrong. They're a lot like the arguments against Facebook or Tesla. It's that the whole thing is so daisy chained together at this point that the system, the people who run things now, they can't afford any of these systems to stop working. The people that run China can't afford Yuan to do the thing that Kyle Bass knows, and probably the ruling classes of China know will happen. They probably know as much as Kyle Bass knows. They know that at some point they're going to have to. I don't know if catastrophic is the right word, but they're going to have to continue to devalue the yuan at an incredible rate. And eventually that reaches a point where people lose any faith in it. And this is true for every country in the world right now. It's not just China. It is the United States. It is Europe. And it's true of every industry. It's not just social media. It's not just Tesla. I hate to break it to you. It's the shale oil miracle as well. That miracle has a mountain range of debt keeping it from imploding. So yeah, sorry this isn't like an optimistic podcast, but I don't know. I have an interview tomorrow. I am hopeful that I get this job. I am not going to say to myself, well, if I don't get this job, I'm giving up hope. I'm not going to give up hope. Not because I give a fuck about your broken reality. If you have faith in the system, good for you. Go fuck yourself. It's not for you. It's for me. I don't do the things I want to do so some asshole living in a nice neighborhood can feel safe, or fuck you. I don't do this for you. I do it for me. And I don't choose to believe in freedom because some douchebag wants to tell people what they can and cannot say. I don't do it for you, you fuck. You don't even fucking understand. I do it for me. The things I do, the choices I make, are based upon free will and freedom and liberty. And these are things given to me by God, by the Lord in heaven, not by you, not by Democrats or Republicans, not by the Constitution. In fact, the only founding document we have that more or less gets it right is the Declaration of Independence, but even that piece of paper doesn't give it to me. God did. So yeah, good luck to all of us. And if you're making guesses about stocks or home values based upon the assumption that we live in a free market, I mean, you need to reassess your paradigm, dude. The free market in this country is pretty much dead.